Welcome to the Higher Self Podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to help you unravel anything keeping you from a life of true abundance, joy, and happiness, which is your birthright. Each week, we'll bring in different guests specifically tailored to help you on your journey to discovering your higher self. Whether it's spirituality, business, finances, health, or relationships, there are no topics that are off limits. So get ready and enjoy this week's episode on the higher self.
How do I want to start this
one? I mean, that's a good question.
That is a good question, right? We'll start it like that. We'll start it like that. I love it when it's just like authentic.
The behind the scenes, right?
That's showing people
that I also don't know what the hell I'm doing most of the time, right?
which is as authentic as it gets.
It's so funny because you see somebody on any kind of screen.
Right.
And you assume
they have it all figured out.
Totally.
Right, exactly. Anyways, that was our opening, which means this is going to be a fun episode.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I'll tell you the story real fast about our guest, which I just told you. Back when I used to own my real estate company, Intero, I would get books that I really believed in or that really, you know, resonated with me or that would really inspire our sales team to become better versions of themselves. And we would have everybody buy them, or we would buy them and give them away. And your book was one of those books.
That's awesome, man.
I remember, and I didn't put two and two together because Casper was really excited about having you here because you've helped him and his story and his
journey. Looking out, Casper.
Life. Yeah. And I didn't put two and two together till I walked away and put my dog away. And I was like, the miracle morning.
Oh, you didn't realize that was the book.
I didn't realize that. So literally right now. So the author of The Miracle Morning, hello, Elrod, how are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. I love in person. I'm always on Zoom.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so refreshing to have a conversation with somebody for a podcast.
Sure.
Yeah, great.
Do you live here in Austin?
I live in Dripping Springs, about 35 minutes away.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Isn't it beautiful how many awesome people have like come here?
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's attracting a really cool group.
For sure. So let's start off with, tell me a little bit about your story. I know you've had three major life changing crises / gifts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's start off with the first one. I remember that at the very beginning, you know, I remember this about you. You had, I believe you were like negative $60,000 in the hole, something along those lines, right?
Yeah.
And I remember because that resonated with me because when I first started, I remember I was negative $38,000 in the hole.
Okay.
So you have me beat.
Yeah.
talk to me about that and how you were able to fight your way out of that. And I ask you about that because so many people today are economy scared.
Yep.
You know?
Totally.
They see what's happening on the news. They're afraid and they feel as though the control of their future is outside of them.
Yep.
You obviously realize otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was 2007-ish and the economy had crashed. I just bought my first house about a year and a half prior at the peak of the market. Almost the peak. Then I refinanced it at the peak.
To make it even better.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
that was a joke to make it worse.
To make it much worse.
Yeah, it was.
But so what happened is, I'm the eternal optimist, right? And so to the point of, I always say there's a fine line between optimism and delusion, right? I cross it often. And so when the economy started to tank, like I never watched the news. I was just always in my own little bubble. And people go, oh, you dude, are you watching the news? Are you worried about the recession? I'm like, I create my own economy, man. I'm not worried about that, right? It's a real thing. When all of a sudden your clients, you know, like I was a coach. That was most of my income. I was a coach primarily and then wrote my first book and working on being a speaker and those things, but making money as a coach, coaching mostly entrepreneurs and salespeople. So when their businesses dry up and they can't pay their bills, they call you and go, hey, I either don't pay my mortgage or I don't pay you. I know we're in a contract, but can I get out of it? And I'm like, of course, you know, I'm not going to hold you against your will. And within a matter of months, I lost over half of my clients. I mean, it was like, boom, but week after, I mean, multiple, you know, every day I'm losing clients. And thus I lost over half of my income. And like most people, I was, you know, I spent about 90% of my income every month, some months 110%, right, depending on the month. And so losing half of my income meant I couldn't pay the mortgage. I had to figure out what am I not going to pay? And you mentioned the $60,000 in debt. I mean, so it was $52,000 in personal credit card debt in a matter of about 6 months. So I'm basically putting $8,000-$9,000 a month on a credit card to pay the bills. Finally decide, I can't pay my mortgage, man. I can't. And so I stopped paying the mortgage. Bank goes in, you know, foreclosure, all of that. And it was about a 6-month downward spiral into just hopelessness and depression and fear. Like I'm an identity crisis. Cause I go, I'm a success coach and I am failing miserably. I'm a mess mentally, emotionally, physically. I'd canceled the gym membership. My body fat percentage had tripled. Like financially, I'm a mess, all these things. And after 6 months, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, she stuck with me through all this, Ursula, she said, hey, why don't you call your friend John Berghoff? You know, you always tell me he's one of the smartest people that you know. Maybe he can give you some advice. And I go, man, why didn't I do that 6 months ago? Okay, I called John and a series of events, his advice, he says, listen to this Jim Rohn audio and go for a run every morning. I said, dude, I hate running. He said, what do you hate worse, running or your circumstances?
That's right.
I was like, my circumstances, but how's running going to turn that around? He goes, hell, if you sit in front of your computer every day with this low level of mental and emotional and spiritual energy, he said, you're going to stay there. He said, but if you get your heart rate up every morning, get blood and oxygen to your brain, you'll think clearer, you'll feel better, you'll have more energy, and you can turn this around. It starts with you. I was like, all right, I'll go for a run. And so the next morning, I go for a run, listen to that Jim Rohn audio, and I hear a quote that said, changes everything. Jim Rohn says, your level of success will seldom exceed your level of personal development. Probably heard the quote before, but it landed. And I went, okay, wait a minute. On a scale of 1 to 10, I want level 10 success in every area of my life, but my level of personal development is like at a 2, maybe a 3 or 4, right? And that, I believe, is the disconnect for the majority of society. Everybody wants level 10 in every area. Very few people have a dedicated practice each day to become a level 10 person, the level 10 version of them. And so I ran home with this epiphany. I go, I'm going to go figure out what the world's most successful people do for their personal development, and I'm going to do it like a daily personal development ritual. I want like the best of the best. And I go online for like an hour and I'm Googling, you know, what do millionaires and billionaires do and champions and Olympians and all this. And I was looking for one or two practices and I ended up a list of 6. And I almost threw in the towel because I go, I was like, you know, what do they say, you know, oh, you're overwhelmed, analysis by paralysis by analysis. And I'm going, I can't do all 6 of these. Like, I don't have time for that. I go, which one's the best? I don't know. And it was meditation, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading and journaling. The other reason I almost dismissed it is because nothing was new, right? We're conditioned in this society to, if it's not new, if I've heard of it, it must not work because I've heard of it. It would be working already.
It couldn't possibly be that I haven't applied it.
Applied it,
It couldn't possibly
and that's
be that.
What, and that's the thing is I'm looking at the list and I'm going, okay, I don't know. There's none that's better than the other. These are all old practices. And I go, oh, wait a minute. The world's most successful people since the beginning of arguably time have sworn by these practices and attributed their success to them. Why not me? Yeah, I'm not doing it. And then the real epiphany was, what if I did all of these? What if I woke up an hour earlier and I dedicated 10 minutes each to the 6 most timeless proven personal development practices in the history of humanity? I thought that would be the ultimate. And I went from being depressed for those 6 months, like getting worse and worse, to I was excited,
right?
Like I think Tony Robbins says, you know, that it's a lack of a vision for a compelling future that causes depression.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden I was like, wait, this could be it. I'm going to try this. And I woke up the next morning like a kid on Christmas. And I was like, and I had opened 6 tabs the night before. How to meditate. I don't know. How to do affirmations. How to visualize. Like, I don't know. You know, I mean, exercise, sure. Reading, I can do a couple of these things. How to journal, you know. And I woke up the next morning. I fumbled my way through the 6 practices. But at the end of that hour, I felt incredible. Again, 6 months of feeling scared and depressed. That morning, I went, this is it. If I start every day like this, with this much clarity and energy, and I'm learning something new and applying it every day, it's only a matter of time before I become that level 10
something
person.
Something has to happen.
Yeah. And I become that person to change everything. And it happened so fast. In 2 months, in a declining economy, I doubled my income. And we can get into the details of how I did that. And it's actually funny. I've been waiting for the next recession to change the way I tell this story because I haven't told it around like how to beat the economy, right? Like, but now I'm like, oh, when the next economic crash comes, I'm going to share how I was able to apply what became the miracle morning. And I'll share the last part of this, which is I went to my wife after 2 months and I had signed on 2 more clients that day. We had officially doubled our income. I went, sweetheart, this morning routine is a freaking miracle. Like because of it, we've doubled our income in the last 2 months. She goes, it's your miracle morning. I go, yeah, I like that. Miracle morning, right? And so I started sharing it with my coaching clients. And they almost all came back and said, I'm not a morning person. I said, I know, neither was I.
That's the whole point.
And I gave some tricks. Like, I'm like, here's how you beat the snooze button. Here's the tips. Here's the logistics. And they started applying it and they all came back to the next call. All but one. 13 out of 14 clients came back and said, dude, I'm a morning person and I'm having the best week in my sales career. Again, economy's getting worse. People are getting better. Results are getting better. And that's when the light bulb went off. And I thought, if this changed my life and I wasn't a morning person and it changed my clients' lives and most of them were morning people, this could change the world. And I have a responsibility to put this in a book and share this with the world. And, you know, I never imagined it would sell millions of like, I self-published it. I mean, the rest was like, you know, blew my mind. So
it took off.
Yeah, it took it. And it we need to get into that too. It took a long time to take off, a long time of consistent sharing effort, so on and so forth. So yeah.
I love that. You know, it's so interesting to me that the thing that really happened was you took personal responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's the disconnect for so many people, you know, whether it's Instagram or whether it's at one of our events, I always get this question, like, please tell me what to do to change my life.
Yeah.
And it's never something new.
Yeah, no.
It's just that you haven't actually taken responsibility to do the things that you have heard at least once in your life.
Yeah.
That could actually change your life.
I heard it recently. Someone said this. It was so poetic. It was my friend John Vroman. He said, it's not about learning something new. It's about remembering something true.
Yes.
I was like, that's it. And I would say remembering/implementing something true, right?
If I can be truthful and honest, I'm going to share something. I went through that same exact scenario in 2007. Hmm. But I am going through a new scenario right now with my health. And I wake up every morning, I meditate, I visualize, I exercise. What I'm realizing, however, is that my diet, I've been too hard on myself. And I've been too hard on my body, which what I mean is at 45 years old, I've got to start thinking about the future. And, you know, deadlifting and bench pressing and so forth and so on is great. But man, when am I going to wake up and realize that every time I go to yoga, I could barely move and everything hurts me. And every pose that requires any sort of depth to it, I almost want to cry.
Wow.
Because I'm holding on to so much. And today was actually the first morning I told Jen, my girlfriend, this. I said, she's a yoga instructor. I said, babe, guess what I did today? She said, what? I go, I started the first day of the rest of my life. I will wake up, roll out of bed, and do yoga every single morning. I don't give a damn if it's for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But every single morning, because I'm tired of feeling when I go to yoga and when I'm at night and I'm feeling uncomfortable, I'm tired of feeling that. And sure. It's me doing it to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I could fix it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Yoga was my first form of exercise when I was doing the Miracle Morning.
Ah.
And first time I'd ever tried it, you know, doing yoga DVDs every day. And I wrote in the book, I said, this is, if I had to pick one form of exercise and only one, that's it, right? And flexibility, strength, I mean, stamina, all of it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, yeah, because it's the best of all things, right? Yeah. It's like, and there's four different forms of yoga too. You can do really high energy, high pace yoga where it's really cardio focused. You can do really slow, methodical, deep, you know, muscle building yoga, right? I mean, yeah, it's also that spiritual, flow as well.
And you could do my favorite, which is yin. Mm. Do you like yin?
What's yin?
Oh, you have to.
I'm a yoga novice.
Oh, yin is you literally go and you just sit in there. And my favorite is yin and sound. Mm. And they'll have you hold a pose for like 3 minutes.
Oh,
and
wow.
You're just laying there while you're stretching.
Yeah.
You know, it's you don't ever stand up.
Have you ever done one of those stretch lab, stretch zones, where you go in and someone stretches you?
No, but I'm in.
So try it. So I just did it yesterday for the first time because I used to be so flexible and I've actually gotten undisciplined in my stretching.
Yeah.
And so it is funny. I was conflicted because I'm like, I shouldn't have to pay someone to stretch me, but I'm like, I'll give it a shot. It was great. It was similar. I went to a place called Stretch Zone because it's out in Lakeway. They have Stretch Lab closer to you.
Okay.
But it's someone that understands the human body, right? They know what they're doing, what they're stretching, and you go in, you tell them what you want. But it's similar to like going in for a massage where it's a really beautiful, like you just lay there and you say, I want to work on my lower body, I want to work on my back or whatever, right? And they just, you know, they stretch and you tell them if it's too much or too that. But it's like, you know, it's 30 minutes and it's like 30 minutes where someone is taking care of you. So it's a really nice kind of, you know,
for sure,
self-care ritual. Yeah.
And the thing that I love about stretching is that, you know, there's times in yoga where, you know, yoga or fascia release or whatever it is that I do where where there's pain in the body, it's normally what I feel is like it's resistance, right? It's your inability to let go. And as I'm doing this, like I can't naturally think about humanity.
Right, and
how stiff we are and how rigid we are and how we don't even know how to breathe and how that causes illness. It causes illness because we're holding on to so much, you know? So I don't know how we started talking about yoga.
But they, and Stretch Lab.
And Stretch Lab,
Sponsored by Stretch Lab.
That's right. So tell me this, because I want to dive into this as well. I know so many people out there have had this goal at one point in time. I want to write a book.
Yeah.
You've written 15 of them.
Yeah.
Where does someone begin?
So my first book, I was telling you, most people don't know about it. It was called Taking Life Head On, and it took me 6 years to write it. I self-published it in 2006, and it was about my head-on collision with a drunk driver. So when I was 20 years old, I was driving home from giving a speech at a conference for the company I worked for. And I was 20 and driving a brand new Ford Mustang, my first new car. I had bought it off the lot 3 weeks earlier. And a man I had never met before got in a full-size Chevy truck, and he got on the freeway. He was drunk, going the wrong way. And they asked me if he was doing 80 miles an hour. I was going about 70 miles an hour. And we collided head-on at 80 and 70 miles per hour. And my car spun off the drunk driver, and the car behind me hit me in the door at 70 miles an hour. Oof. So I always tell people when I tell the story, like, to, you know, imagine, look over your left shoulder and imagine that, you know, someone comes at you at 70 miles an hour and hits you in the door of your car. And I broke 11 bones. You know, instantaneously, I broke my femur in half. I broke my pelvis in three places. I broke my humerus bone behind the bicep in half, shattered my elbow, fractured my eye socket in like multiple places, almost completely severed my ear. And I was clinically dead for 6 minutes when they pulled me out of the car. I had lost so much blood. It took them an hour to use the jaws of life and yank me out of the car. And when they did, I had lost so much blood that, you know, I lost the rest basically once they pulled me out and my heart stopped. And so I was not breathing for 6 minutes, no heartbeat. They revived me. Thank God they didn't give up on me. And I went to the hospital and spent 6 days in a coma. Flatlined twice more, had, you know, a bunch of surgeries and came out of the coma and to face, you know, I woke up in a hospital going, what, where am I? Why, what's going on? And, you know, Hal, you've broken 11 bones. You have permanent brain damage. The doctors say you were never going to walk again. And, you know, it's an unimaginable reality for anybody at any age. And, I had learned something in my, and I know I'm going on a tangent, but we'll circle back to the book. But I had learned something in my sales training. I was working for Cutco at the time. Are you familiar with Cutco?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I was giving the speech at the Cutco conference. And I learned something in my sales training from my mentor. He called it the 5-minute rule. And he simply said that when something goes wrong, most people dwell on it for an extended period of time and it's not healthy. It's healthy to feel your emotions, right? But not for hours, you know, I mean, right? Be upset or angry or frustrated or resentful or hateful or whatever. Feel it, acknowledge it, and move through it. And so he taught us this thing called the 5-minute rule. He said, set your timer for 5 minutes and give yourself 5 minutes to feel everything. Cuss, moan, bitch, whatever. Punch a wall. You feel it. And he said, after 5 minutes, you say 3 really simple, powerful words. Can't change it. I can't change what happened in the past, whether it was 5 minutes or 5 decades ago. So I now have a choice. I can continue to resist it, wish it didn't happen and be miserable, or I can completely accept it and be at peace. Those are really your only two choices, some variation of those. And so when I came out of the coma and I was facing this, that mindset I had been applying for a year and a half. And so I quickly accepted what had happened. I thought, I can't change that I was in a car accident, so I can choose to be happy and grateful regardless while I figure out my new life, you know? And I was so happy. The doctors called my parents in one day and they said, we're concerned with Hal. He's always smiling and laughing and joking, and that's not normal. We believe he's in denial. He's in delusion. He can't accept what happened to him. This is 2 weeks after the accident. I've been out of the coma for about a week, still being told I'm never going to walk again. So my dad came in and he sat me down. He's upset and concerned for me. And he said, Hal, how are you really feeling? The doctors are concerned. You know, they say it's normal for you to feel sad or scared or depressed or angry and like, that you're covering those emotions up. How are you really feeling? And without much hesitation, I looked at him. I said, Dad, I thought you knew me better than that. I live by the 5-minute rule. It's okay to be negative, but not for more than 5 minutes. It's been 2 weeks since my car accident. I can't change that I was in a car accident. And if the doctors are right and I never walk again, I've decided I'll be the happiest, most grateful person that you've ever seen in a wheelchair because I'm in a wheelchair either way, right? And it's this decision that I'm never going to let anything that's out of my control determine my inner world, my inner state. That's the one thing that's always in our control. And again, why do we create emotional pain for ourselves? We think it's someone else's fault or something else's fault. We always have something to point to. Of course I'm upset. I was in a car accident. Of course I'm angry. Look at what, you hear what he said to me, right? It's like, but it's never the thing that we're pointing at. It's always our interpretation and response. And to the degree that we resist reality and wish something were different than it is, that determines the degree of emotional pain that we create. And the opposite of resistance is acceptance. Mm. And so I would say, like, acceptance is that key that unlocks the door to just free emotional freedom. Mm-hmm. And so I had applied that. And so then the doctor said, when my dad went back, and I don't think they believed him, but he goes, if your son really thinks this way, he should write a book about it. And that's where that seed was planted. And then it took me 6 years, you know, and 6 years later, the book was finally published, and this and that. So where to write a book, or how, by the way, any follow-up questions? And then I don't want to.
No.
Okay.
Keep going.
All right. Yeah. So, obviously I've learned a lot on, you know, my first book took me 6 years. Second book took me 3 years. Last book took me 6 months. So I'm getting getting faster, better at it. To me, the simplest place to start is to model books that you like, right? When I was writing The Miracle Morning, I was reading 4-Hour Workweek at the time. And if you actually look at the Miracle Morning, the format of the opening, Tim Ferriss has, he called it the Chronology of Pathology. And it was year by year summary of his story, right? In bold, it would say the year and then little paragraph about. And I was like, ooh, I like that format, right? So I did that, you know? And then I would read a book by Brendan Burchard and go, I like how he did this in the intro. And I would do that, right? So obviously, you know, it starts with, what are you going to write about? And I think that the answer to that, it really depends. For me, it was initially my car accident story and the lessons that I learned and the lessons I applied to be able to handle it with such relative ease, you know, mentally and emotionally. With The Miracle Morning, it was like, okay, now I've got to teach this framework that I do for my Miracle Morning, but how am I going to, the question that drove me crazy was, and it caused so much self-doubt, I thought, how am I going to convince someone to wake up earlier than they already do when most people have a very strong belief that says, dude, I'm not a morning person, right? I go, how am I going to convince? And even if I convince them, how am I going to, what can I teach them that it's going to stick, right? That they're not going to try it for a few days, go, this is great. And then when the newness wears off, they're just going to fall back into sleeping in, right? So that question drove the entire book. So I think that if I dissect that, it's asking yourself, what's the benefit that I want the reader to get from the book that I'm writing? Because I think we can get caught up in, what do I want to say, right? What's the story I want to tell? What do I want to say? And you always have to let what your North Star has to be is, what's the benefit I want the reader to get from this book? And then that drives everything. And then it's, what do I need to do to give them that benefit? One of the answers to that question for me is, I've got to make this entertaining. I want to end every chapter on a cliffhanger so that they're like, damn it, I got to read the next chapter, you know? And I've had people tell me that, and that makes me so happy when they're like, dude, I started reading your book and I planned on just reading that, and I was up till 3 a.m. and I finished the whole thing, you know? And I'm like, yes, that part worked. I love that. So, yeah.
So now you've just told us you lost everything. Mm-hmm. You got in a car crash. You know, those are two pretty big life altering moments.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think the secret sauce is? You know, what do you think the secret sauce is for not being a victim, for not feeling sorry for yourself, you know, and for having as much energy, passion, and love for life as you do?
I think that the answer to a couple of those questions kind of in one is taking responsibility. That was actually, when I go back to that first book, Taking Life Head On, that was the first, I think, lesson was, the moment you take responsibility for everything in your life is the moment that you gain the power to change anything in your life. And my friend, John Berghoff, the guy that told me about the Jim Rohn quote and going on the run and stuff, it's funny, when I look back at my life, I'm like, wow, John's given me a lot of good advice. But we should get on the podcast. But he, where was I going with that? Oh, no. What was I talking about? Taking Life Head On. Taking responsibility. Oh, John helped me gain a different way of sharing that, instead of saying the moment you take responsibility for everything is the moment you gain the power to change anything, which is true. John said, I think it's more accurate to say the degree of responsibility that you take for everything in your life determines the degree of power you have to change anything in your life. If you take a little bit of responsibility, you got a little bit of power.
Yeah.
Right? And here's the thing. This is I think what will help liberate people from the hangup that stops most of us from taking responsibility is that we confuse responsibility and blame. Right? So for example, if someone said, "I'm not going to take responsibility for, you know, my childhood trauma. It wasn't my fault. My mom and dad did that to me." Right? Or in my case, it was like, "Well, I'm not responsible for the car accident. The drunk driver did that to me. He is to blame. My parents are to blame," right? The economy is to blame. And here's the distinction. Blame determines who's at fault, right? Which is about the past. Responsibility determines who's committed to changing things moving forward.
Beautiful.
That's the distinction. You go, you may not be to blame,
right?
But you are 100% responsible. I wasn't to blame for my car accident. But sitting there wallowing as a victim going, "It's not my fault that I'm in a car accident."
And that is your choice.
Yeah, exactly. It's a conscious choice. It's what kind of life do you want to live? Do you want to be a victim? And do you want to be at the mercy of forces outside of yourself?
That's right.
Or do you want to be completely in control, not of your life, because nobody's in control of it all. There's a lot of things that are going to happen, but control of you. Mm-hmm. Like when the pandemic hit, that was the question that I asked myself was, what should I focus on right now? Right? Like, I feel like I've never felt so out. It's this collective out of controlness, right? It's like, there's a disease and I don't know what's going to happen and they're locking us down and I'm not allowed to leave my house. And like, right. I feel like that which is out of our control was amplified. It has been ever since then. It amplified, right? Shoved in our face, amplified, beaten over the head with it. And so I realized that, I mean, it sounds simple, but when we focus on that which is out of our control, we feel out of control. And that causes anxiety and fear and depression. And so I went, well, what can I control? And at the end of the day, the one thing we can control is our inner state. That's it, right? How do you think? What emotions are you generating for yourself? What are you focusing on? And I really doubled down on my Miracle Morning and I encouraged the Miracle Morning community. I was like, "Hey guys, I would record podcasts." Like my first podcast after 2020 was, "What should we focus on right now?" You know, everybody tuned in to see, well, what do we focus on? I was like, focus on being the best version of yourself and showing up at your best every day, because that's all you can control. You can show up at your best every day. And if you do that, you can handle any adversity that comes your way much more effectively than if you are at the mercy of the adversity, you know?
You know, and that's where, guys, listen, if you listen to this podcast every week, please hear what I'm about to say. Because I genuinely want you to understand, like, week after week, people are saying the same thing in a different freaking version.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You took me back to when COVID started for us. I'm living in California and the entire state shut down. And I can remember, I woke up, I went for my run, I got on my cell phone and then go, "Okay, everybody, here's what's going on.
I listened
on.
To that today on the way here."
Really? Yeah, yeah. The state of California has shut down. Here's what I choose.
Yep.
I choose to not participate.
Yep.
You know? Now, you might think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about that. Yep. I'm just telling you that there is this option called your choice to not participate. And what does not participating look like? Well, it looks like you not being afraid.
Yeah.
It looks like you not being controlled by something outside of you. It looks like you doubling down on your walking, your running, your yoga, whatever it is that you do. It looks like you doubling down on being vigilant over the drinks that you consume, the foods that you eat, the things that you see, and the messages that you hear.
Mm.
Because all of that is purposefully giving you a gift, and that gift is fear.
Yeah.
And I call it a gift because with that gift, you can become more powerful or you could succumb to it.
Yeah.
You know, and I say this because as I travel, and I travel quite a bit, I'm noticing at the airports, like, you know, again, this is not about wear a mask, don't wear a mask, do whatever you want. I'm just noticing it's like they're back.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I noticed. Yeah. I noticed that.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, is this going to be like a thing for from now on, every winter, people put on a mask, because that is a choice.
Sure.
The same way you learning and saying, no, my choice is different. My choice is getting healthier, being stronger, walking more, exercising more, eating healthier, having more inner discipline.
Yeah.
And I want you all to please listen to that, because it's never going to change.
Yeah.
It's always going to be something. It's always going to be the economy. It's always going to be COVID. It's always going to be the election. It's always going to be racism. It's always going to be, you know, you grew up in the wrong neighborhood. Yes, I get all of that. Yes, yes. God bless you. I went through all those things myself.
Sure.
The difference is, what are you going to do about it, and what are you going to choose?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it's the ultimate freedom, you know, is inner freedom, right? To realize that, like, that for me has been my big focus. In fact, that'll be my next book that I write. Like, that's the top. I'm actually doing a 10-year anniversary of The Miracle Morning. And it'll come out probably not for another year, but I'm adding a chapter that is based on my next book. Cause I'm like, I don't want to wait to get that content to people. Right. And, the book will be called The Miracle Life, but
that's beautiful.
Yeah. And the way I explain it is, it's not a change in your circumstances. It's a complete transformation in how you experience your circumstances. Right. And that's the ultimate freedom, is to be able to choose how you experience every moment of your life, regardless of what's going on.
Absolutely.
And I feel like I learned how to do that during the car accident. I learned how to do, you know, I mean, the economy crash. I mean, all of these things, right? Yeah, and that's it. And so if you're listening, right, you literally, you know, whatever you want your experience of life to be, if you want to be happy, at peace, grateful, joyful, confident, you can choose that. How do you choose it? Number one, you choose it. Number two, you condition it. Right? It's a choice and then conditioning. It's that day. It's like choosing to get in good shape. The choice doesn't get you in good shape.
That's right.
Right? Same thing with that inner conscious state of consciousness. Just choosing it doesn't change. You've got to condition it daily, every day conditioning. You know?
Beautiful. Thank you for that gift. Thank you for that gift. So let's talk about the miracle morning.
Sure.
Right? Let's talk about some basics. So somebody's hearing it and it's finally landing.
Yeah.
It's finally like, all right, I listen to this podcast every week. And this guy's saying basically the same thing that everybody who has an abundant, wonderful life is saying. You know, where does someone begin?
So, the Miracle Morning, the essence of it is, I mean, it's about how you start your day, right? And the how you start your day sets the tone, the context, and the direction for how you live your day. And most of us start our day in a relatively subpar, you can call it a mediocre morning, right? It's like when we usually look
the
at
mediocre morning.
We look at our.
Let's write a book.
Yeah.
The mediocre.
No, I've taught my buddy JP Sears. I've talked to about eventually doing a parody, the Miracle Morning, or the Mediocre Morning.
The Mediocre Morning.
But you know, the idea is, and if you're listening to this, we can all relate to this, where you look at your schedule and you go, okay, what time do I have to be somewhere, do something, or answer to someone else? You go, okay, I got that time. How long is it going to take me to get ready? And you back it up by 30 minutes or 45 minutes, right? And you go, how many times do I want to hit the snooze button, right? I mean, the people literally bake that in. And then you go, okay, I'm going to get up at the last possible minute to not, you know, lose my job, have my children taken away from me, have my marriage fall apart. I call that a mediocre morning. It's like, it's the last possible moment. But if you study the world's most successful people, you find that most of them have a morning ritual. In fact, I read a statistic this morning that I think it's 92% of people that have a morning ritual identify themselves as highly productive, right? Not 92% of people, but people that have a morning ritual. And so for me, I wasn't a morning person when I started. And by the way, if for anybody that's listening that wants to try a morning routine, my biggest logistical tip is keep your alarm clock as far across the room as possible. If it is within arm's reach, myself included, even the Miracle Morning guy that I am, if I can reach, I turn it off while I'm asleep, right? You just reach over, you're like, what's that beeping sound, right? And all of a sudden you snooze your morning away and you missed out. But if it's in the bath, for me, it's in my bathroom, right? I have to get up, walk across the room. Now I'm up, I'm awake, right? It's 10 times easier to stay awake when you're already upright. So a little bonus tip, you know, on the front end. If you're listening to this, I want to give you, so you can remember this, the Miracle Morning, I mentioned it was made up of 6 practices. They are now organized into an acronym so you can remember them. And I owe that to my wife. I was writing the book one day and I go, sweetie, I got these 6 practices, but they're all like mix and match and none of them are new and they're not original. And she goes, why don't you get a thesaurus and see if you can swap out some of the words with synonyms and then organize it into an acronym so people can remember it.
You got a brilliant wife.
I know. Right? Yeah. So meditation became silence. By the way, so the acronym is S-A-V-E-R-S.
S-A-V-E-R-S.
These are the, I call these the lifesavers, right?
Savers.
And when I came up with that, I was like, these really are the 6 practices that saved me from missing out on my full potential. Like what an appropriate acronym.
Yeah.
So silence, S for silence, that's your meditation or your prayer or your breath work, starting your day in a peaceful way to get centered. The A is for affirmations. And I teach affirmations different than most of the self-help gurus that have taught them, you know. I feel like they're one of two ways that we've been taught affirmations. Number one is either just lie to yourself and tell yourself that you're wealthy until you believe it. And then you really like, there may be some merit to that, but if you're broke, like if you're financially, your bank account's empty and you just affirm every day, I am wealthy. I am a millionaire, right? You're subconscious.
By the way, you say it in that like motivational guru voice, by the way.
And then the second problem with affirmations, if you're not lying to yourself, is we're taught to use this flowery passive language that produces a magical result independent of any effort. We've all probably heard the affirmation, I am a money magnet.
Yeah.
Money flows to me effortlessly and in abundance, right? That's not how money works. And so for me, affirmations, the three steps. Number one, affirm what you're committed to. You don't get what you want just because you want it. Don't say, I want $1 million or I'm a million. Say, I'm committed to blank, whatever that blank is for you. When I had cancer, we could talk about that if we get into it, but I was diagnosed with cancer and given a 20% chance of surviving about 5 years ago. And my affirmation, because I had fear for sure, what if I die and I leave my 7-year-old daughter and my 4-year-old son without a dad? I affirmed every day, I'm committed to beating cancer and living to be 100+ years old alongside Ursula and the kids. Oh,
that, you're my second guest today who's committed to living 100. Adrian said 115, Adrian? 120.
Oh.
I'm 120.
Easy. Okay, all right, so man, I got to up my, now you guys are going to live past me, dude.
Come on.
All right, 120.
120.
Dan Sullivan's 156, I think. So
156.
That's his commitment. His plan is 156.
Jeez Louise.
You got to have him on, yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm committed. So number one, affirm what you're committed to, right? Whatever the outcome, whatever the result, or whatever the habit is. It could be just, I'm committed to writing for 60 minutes a day or writing 1,000 words a day to write that book, you know? Number two, affirm why it is a must for you, right? It's the whole, Simon Sinek, you know, the power of why. I always bullet point it. Like, I'm committed to beating cancer because I promised my wife forever and a day. I'm committed to beating cancer for my dad because he gave up everything to save my life. I'm committed to beating cancer for my mom because she doesn't deserve to lose another child. I'm committed to cancer for Sophie and Halston because they need their dad's love, leadership, and affection. So all the bullet points that make that number one, that first commitment, you're like, oh yeah, this is why I am fully committed no matter what. There is no other option. And reading that every day programs your subconscious mind and aligns your behavior.
Forgive me, but so fucking powerful. Seriously, man. Seriously. Thank you for that gift.
Yeah. I don't know where it came through me, but I appreciate that. Yeah. And then the third step is affirm which specific actions you will take and when, right? That's where the rubber meets the road. It's like, you don't just affirm, oh, I'm committed to this and here's why it's important. But if you leave it, okay, well, but what are you going to do and when are you going to do it? Like, let's get really detailed. So to beat this cancer or to write this book or to make this $1 million, I will do these things at these times. And I will clarify this. A lot of people might go, okay, I know what I'm, you know, I want to commit to, I want to be financially free or whatever, I want to save my marriage or whatever, right? I know what I want to commit to. I can identify why it's important, but I don't know the steps to take, right? Like, I don't know how to do it. For me, it's I will commit an hour a day from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. to figure this out. That's the starting place, right? And that first day, you're just Google searching it. How do I save my marriage? How do I write a book? How do I start a $1 million business, right?
It's so interesting because for me, like, I did this last night. Like, I'm tired of feeling this way. I did yoga yesterday and I want to be flexible, right? And I want to live to be 120. And part of that is I've got to maintain flexibility. So I was up last night, like, looking at, like, guys that are in their 50s and 60s, nice, that are strong, that have vitality, that are flexible, that look stronger than most guys that are 20.
Yeah.
And then I said, you know, one of the things that all of them are doing is they wake up every morning and they start doing some sort of body movement or I don't know exactly what they're doing, but I'm just going to roll out the yoga mat and like do some shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And it felt incredible.
Incredible. Yeah. Now, for anybody listening to, like, you ever use the app 7-Minute Workout?
No.
Dude, it's killer. So if for anybody that wants a little guidance, right? Like, you know, an app on the phone. You can also go to YouTube and just type in 7-Minute Workout and they have like a video of the app. So you can just watch it. But it's great. It's a full body workout in 7 minutes. You do 12 exercises, 30 seconds each with a 10-second break. And it's killer.
And by the way, for those of you that are listening that want to change your body or your health in 2023 or like starting today, one of the things most people don't realize is that those first 30 minutes of your day determine the metabolism for your body for the rest of the day.
Yep.
So if you could just get up out of bed when you wake up and roll out and just do jumping jacks, do high knees, start stretching, it'll do something. It'll definitely change your physiology.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we're at silence, affirmations. The V is for visualization.
Yes.
And just a quick note on visualization. Again, the self-help gurus have taught you to make a vision board. And it, to me, that's counterproductive. There's some merit to it. There's some value in it. But we're just taught to visualize the end result. Visualize the house, the car, the crossing the finish line of the marathon. The value in that is if you do see it and you feel it, and you can start to feel it as possible. That's the value in it. But if you leave it at that, I believe visualization is more counterproductive, because what you do is you're tricking your subconscious into thinking that those images on the board or that end result is a foregone conclusion independent of your effort. And that's not true. So for me, I'll spend 30 seconds, maybe 60 seconds visualizing the end result, the outcome that I want, but I'll spend 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes visualizing me doing the activity that day that will produce the result in the long run. So when I was training I ran an ultra marathon and I hated running. And the nature was to procrastinate, right? Alarm goes off at 7 a.m. That's when I said I was going to run. And I'd be like, I'll run tomorrow, right? We all do that. Right. And what I would do is during my miracle morning, I would visualize the alarm going off on my phone at 7 a.m. And I would have my eyes closed and I'd literally picture lifting it up, turning it off. And then I'd picture myself walking into my bedroom closet, putting on my running clothes. I'd see this whole thing like a movie. Then I'd visualize myself walking out my living room. I'd visualize grabbing my front door to my house, opening the door. I'd visualize seeing the sidewalk. And then I would do something to put myself in a positive state. I would just even affirm, like, dude, I'm committed to going on this run because it's going to make me stronger and faster and more capable. It's going to be the best run of my life. And I would mentally rehearse that positive emotional state for the activity I needed to do today to get me across the finish line. And here's the power in that, Danny. When the alarm went off on my phone at 7 a.m. and I picked it up, instead of procrastinating, which would have been human nature.
The story was already.
It's like, no, I didn't rehearse procrastinating that morning. I rehearsed setting it down on the table, getting off the couch. So it was like clockwork. It was like automatic. If you're listening to this, anything that you don't want to do, that you resist doing, that you procrastinate on, that you need to do to get where you want to go, that's where visualization I found to be the most powerful technique to do it. And then I, in the training 500 miles and doing the marathon and all that. Then the E is for exercise. And like you said, I'm not saying go to the gym in the morning. I'm saying do 60 seconds of jumping jacks at the very least, because that will wake you the heck up.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
Or do that 7-minute workout app or do some yoga, whatever, right? Like, but you got to get the blood flowing in the morning because it gets blood and oxygen to your brain. Robin Sharma said he was in the Miracle Morning movie. We did a documentary. And Robin Sharma said that, there are studies that have shown that the benefits of morning exercise last as long as 13 hours after the exercise. Not just the physical benefits, but the cognitive benefits, right? Like you think clearer, you have more energy, so on and so forth. The R in Savers is for reading. And again, not rocket science, but just reading 5 pages out of a book. I always say we're one book away from one strategy or one concept, that can change our entire life. If you want to be happier, there's 1,000 books on doing that. You want to save your marriage. Most people that get a divorce, if you ask them, how many books did you guys read on saving your marriage? How many do you think it would be, Danny, typically?
Zero.
It's like, dude.
I didn't read any.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be saved. So
All right, fair enough.
I purposely pushed the book away.
Fair enough. All right. And then the final S in Savers, it was originally journaling. Right? But the J would have made the acronym awkward, Saverja.
Saverja.
So I got scribing with the thesaurus's help. And so scribing means writing, And so for me every morning, it's 3 things. Real quick, takes a few minutes. I journal anything I need to let go of right now. I usually close my eyes, my hand on my heart, anything I'm hanging on, I'm feeling stressed about, I'm upset about, I'm hanging on to. I'm going to write it down. I'm letting go of blank, right? Number 2, I'm grateful for blank. And number 3, today I'm committed to blank. And it's basically looking at my to-do list and going, I've got 30 things on this to-do list. What's the number one thing I'm committed to getting done today that will move the needle more than anything else right now in my life or business?
Beautiful.
And then what's number 2? What's number 3 if I can get to those?
Beautiful.
And that's it. And Robert Kiyosaki is one of the biggest advocates of the Miracle Morning. He read the book. His assistant reached out, had me on. She said, hey, Robert and his wife have read the Miracle Morning 3 times. They do it every day. And he wants to have you on Rich Dad Radio. And I was like, jaw on the floor. I'm like, Robert Kiyosaki read my book 3 times? That's crazy. But at the end of the interview, he said, Hal, before you wrote The Miracle Morning, he said, I'd be willing to bet that every successful person on the planet swears by at least one of the savers and attributes their success to the books they read, to their meditation practice, to their whatever it is. He said, but I've never heard of anyone. He said, I practice, you know, a few of those. I've never heard of anyone that does all six of them and in one ritual. And he said, you named the book correctly because he goes, since I've started practicing the savers, I'm seeing miracles in my life.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I'm like, can I repeat that? Like that you said it better than I have, you know? So yeah, so that's it.
Okay. So let me, so savers. So one is
silence,
which is your meditation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. I do that one.
Prayer.
And you or know, prayer. Whatever.
For me, it's both actually. Right. Yeah.
How long do you do it? Because people get attached to like, how do you do, by the way, that's another thing. All of you, stop being a victim.
Yeah.
Right? Like right away, you're probably thinking, but I don't know how to meditate
or I don't have time, or I'm already too busy.
He's telling you is just find a way and do something, right? Yeah. So 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
So there's a chapter in the book called The 6-Minute Miracle Morning. And that's not it sounds like a gimmicky headline to me, like a hook, but it's actually, I caught myself on many days, I liked an hour for my miracle morning. And I had many days, I'm like, I got an early appointment or whatever. I only have like 20 minutes. Like I'm not going to, so I would do nothing. And then one day I had like 15 minutes I had to go and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I got nothing. I was like, what if I did a 6-minute version of this? What if I did one really focused minute of silence?
Mm.
And then I pulled out my affirmations and I just got through as many as I could in a minute.
Hold on. So silence, affirmations,
visualization. Jesus.
Okay. Visualizations. E is
exercise.
Okay. That one's done. So hold on. Meditation I do, affirmations I don't really do. I need to start doing them. V, visualizations I do. E, exercise I do. R, reading.
Yep.
So you're doing in the morning.
Yep.
You're reading something.
Yep.
Audible count or no?
It does, sure. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So reading, I can do that. And the last one is S scribing. For scribing, for writing. Yeah. I don't do that.
Yeah.
But I could see how all of them would be.
Yeah, it really is. And the thing is, so again, the 6-minute miracle morning, but you know, a lot of people do like a 30-minute. They do 5 minutes for each activity.
Yeah.
Or like I do a 60-minute, but I don't allocate 10 minutes each anymore. I do like my affirmations, they'll take me 10 minutes, but what do I do? Like 20 minutes of reading. I do a little longer for reading basically. And then the rest are kind of, and visualization, I do 5 minutes.
And
that's
you
shorter.
Grab the book from your nightstand and just start reading.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, actually I have a miracle morning. I'm glad you said from your nightstand. No, doing the miracle morning in bed to me is like trying to quit. Like that's like you're trying to quit going back to sleep in the morning or snoozing. It's like trying to quit smoking with cigarettes right within arm's reach, right?
So where do you
go? I always say get up. So I in our front room, which is right next outside of my bedroom.
Got it.
We just have a couch, chair, whatever. And my miracle morning set up over there in the corner. Like I've got my books, my journal, like my affirmations
Beautiful.
Are printed, everything.
Beautiful.
My goals are printed. In fact, I have like my goals, my affirmations are stapled together. I got the goals on the front and the affirmations. And I basically have that affirmation formula for each of the goals. So every goal in my life or every area, like parenting, marriage, it's like, I am committed to blank. And then it's a must for me because ... right? Bullet pointing all the reasons why. And to follow through with this commitment, I will do these things at these times.
Beautiful.
So yeah.
Hal, I got to tell you, I haven't been like motivated. I'm a pretty motivated kind of guy, but I'm feeling like jumping off this freaking table and like running right now, man.
Let's do it.
Yeah, thank you, brother. Thank you. Seriously.
You got it, man.
Yeah,
well,
man. And can I share?
Yeah,
and this
please.
Is honest to God. It's like I'm at this chapter in my life where I experienced success, you know, right? In business and in, you know, whatever, right? And then I went on this spiritual journey where I healed.
Mm.
And I reconnected to like my heart, my soul, my feminine side, all of that. And with that, if I'm honest, comes this disconnection from all of the things that you thought were so important to you.
Totally.
So it's almost as if I was like, I don't want to be that version of me anymore. You know, because that version of me back then caused me pain.
Yeah.
Right. But now after 3 years of that, I'm in this. No, I know I'm going to be a billionaire and I know I'm going to have 20 to 30,000 people in auditoriums and I know I'm going to be flexible and healthy and I know I'm going to live to be 120. But I've been in this phase, if I'm honest, of like, I know what's coming.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, no, dude,
you got to make it
fucking happen.
That's right.
Right.
That's
and now right. I want to make it happen. So thank you, man.
Yeah,
this is
you
beautiful.
Got it. It's interesting. I love that you say that because I went through a similar thing where you know, you work so hard to be successful. And then when you achieve a certain level of success, you're kind of like, okay, we're like, at least hopefully you get turned on to spirituality. Sure. You go down that road. And then you're like, I was so attached to my ego and achievement and how I looked. I want to dissolve my ego. And then you do.
Right.
And then you're kind of lost because you're like, okay, I still need to, like, especially if you want to make an impact, which success and impact go hand in hand.
Because you've got
to do
right.
The same things you do to be successful, similarly, are what to make an impact.
Right.
I got to reach more. I got to build an audience. I got to, right? You know?
Right.
And so, and especially after my cancer journey, it was a real wake up call. Like, dude, I'm a workaholic. So I really pushed back against that. I'm like, I need to be a better dad.
It's, you know? It's so important you brought that up because what got me, and let's talk about cancer. What got me into, you know, the spiritual path, the healing journey, and ultimately, if I can be honest, what gives me so much motivation to share the message of healing and of connecting to your highest self is the fact that I was dirt poor, right? Hispanic and on welfare. And I ended up being able to make a little bit of money and I'm doing well for myself, right? Yeah. And with all the cards stacked against me. And then when it came to spirituality, it was the fact that I lost my mom to cancer, you know? And then I lost a friend to cancer. And then I lost my aunt to cancer. And those three people, to me, it was like, there's something more to this. There's something more to this because in each of them, I realized there was an underlying emotion or something that was happening that they weren't aware of that probably caused this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For you and your journey, you said, I'm a workaholic. And as I feel you, brother, like you're go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel. Sure. So what was that journey like for you?
So, 2016, I just moved from California to Texas with my family. And,
you bought at the right time.
Yeah.
God bless you.
Yeah. no, but then we sold. Yeah. We did. We did. Okay. So, but anyway, and it's funny, I had forgotten this until I got cancer, but my buddy Matt said, after you moved to Texas, he goes, we were talking on the phone. He said, do you remember this? He said, you told me that you had this monkey on your back feeling like some tragedy was coming, like something like you were going to face like your next car accident type thing. And I was like, oh, you're right. I had forgotten that. But right. So it's like subtly I knew something was going to happen. And I woke up in the middle of the night struggling to breathe and, you know, went into the ER the next day and they misdiagnosed the pneumonia, didn't have pneumonia, couldn't really, they gave me antibiotics, didn't work. You know, long story short, after like 14 days, three different hospitals, you know, unable to, every other day I'm going into the ER and they're sticking a needle in my back and draining a liter and a half of fluid out of my lung. It's just refilling, refilling, refilling. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong. And they finally figured out it was this very rare aggressive form of cancer called acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And it's a 20 to 30% survival rate. So as the doctor's telling me that, my wife's squeezing my hand, you know, like about to break it as she's going, oh my God, there's a 70 to 80% chance that my husband's going to die in the next, it's literally, it kills you fast. Like I went from being healthy to my lung was collapsing every other day. My heart was on the verge of failing. They had to actually stick a needle in my heart and drain fluid, and my kidneys were failing. And so, he said, if you don't start chemo in the next 24 hours, you maybe have a week or two to live. And I don't fully trust the medical system. That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm like,
I'd actually like to get into it. But
okay. Yeah, we can. Yeah. I got a little, you know, I was like, you know, how dare you threaten me into chemotherapy?
Heck
right.
Yeah.
Like
heck
I said,
that's what they do.
Cause I forgot. So before he told me that, I said, doctor, I would like to cure this holistically. I watched a documentary back in 2005 called Healing Cancer from the Inside Out. Can you support me in that? He said, you don't have that kind of cancer where you have that luxury. And so, you know, I was like, well, give me 24 hours. I'm going to go do some research. And then he goes, okay, but I would start soon. So I was like, I'm not doing chemo. I'm going to find the best holistic doctor in the world. And that's who I'm going to go to.
So
I started doing research and who's the best holistic doctor in the world.
Who'd you find?
Dr. Brzezinski was one of them. He treated Suzanne Summers and cured her cancer naturally. And he happened to be in Houston, which is where I was at MD Anderson Cancer Hospital for my third opinion to really clarify what this was. And that's where the oncologist told me this. And I'm like, oh, it's meant to be. He's here in Houston. Like, it's meant to be. So I call his office. She goes to I don't get to talk to him. I talk to his secretary. She goes to him and tells him what cancer I have and comes back and says, Dr. Brzezinski says that in this case, chemotherapy is the best option for you. He said, the doctor wasn't lying. That's what my doctor said. you literally, it will kill you in a matter of weeks, and you don't have the luxury of, he said from his perspective, no holistic doctor would ever take you on as a patient because of the type of cancer you have. No one's cured it like that. It, because again, it's so fast acting. I was like, oh, and I ended up calling one other holistic, I forgot his name, but, and he was like, go get chemo. He's like, wow, that's okay. It. I was like, all right, well, you know, and it was so every fiber of my being and my value system. I was like, so I'm going to go poison my body, potentially cause other cancers. Ugh. You know, and so here's what I did. It goes back to responsibility. I said, you know what? Okay, it sounds like I have to do chemo. Like there's no better option at this point. I'm not going to go rogue and think, well, I know better than these holistic doctors. And, you know, and so I decided a couple things. Number one is I thought I'm going to do every holistic practice in conjunction with chemo as if all I were doing were the holistic practices. I'm just going to be on nonstop research binge, figuring out what all I can do. And so I ended up applying the best of both. I mean, I did chemotherapy, and the chemo, because it's such an aggressive cancer, they hit you so hard with chemo. 5 different chemo drugs over 5 days, 24 hours a day for 5 consecutive days, and then every 3 weeks. So it was like 650 hours of chemo in over 8 months. And most people die from the chemo, of course, right? I mean, in fact, I was getting chemo one day, and it says on the side of the bag, you know, side effects can cause leukemia. I'm like, dude, I have leukemia. And the quote unquote medicine I'm taking can cause more or different types. I'm like, oh, this is killing me. But on the holistic front, I did 3 coffee enemas a week. I took 70 supplements a day.
Gerson therapy?
So that was one of the books I read. Right. I was combining the best of everything I could. You ever heard of, so there's a great website called, anybody listening, if cancer's in your world right now, go to chrisbeatcancer.com. It's C-H-R-I-S, chrisbeatcancer.com. His name is Chris Work. He had either stage 3 or stage 4 cancer. Doctor said, same thing, start chemo or you're going to die. He decided, nope, I'm gonna go for this. And he cured his own cancer. And then he dedicated his whole life to researching and studying and interviewing the best holistic doctors out there, oncologists. So he's a great resource because he's kind of the one-stop shop where he studied the Gerson therapy and he brings that in and all of the above. But I read books, Radical Remission, I'm drawing a blank, but lots of different books. And I took 70 supplements. I did lymphatic massage. I did ozone therapy. Of course, I did affirmations. And here's the thing. This is my layman's explanation of the mind-body connection. Because the day I was diagnosed with cancer and given a 20 to 30% chance of surviving, and my wife was, you know, a wreck and so scared, I said, sweetheart, I know you're terrified. I am not. And I said, I want to tell you, I've defied the logic of doctors before. And I said, here's the way I'm looking at this. There's a 20 to 30% of the people that get this cancer survive it. I would imagine those 20 to 30% let their doctor's diagnosis determine their mindset. And they probably accept that as their likely fate. They probably live in fear. I said, I'm telling you right now, there is a 100% chance that I will be in the 20 to 30% of those that survive this cancer.
Fuck yeah.
I said, so I will create that statistic, you know? And I said, I have unwavering faith that I will beat it. I will put forth extraordinary effort and do everything in my power to beat it, and you know, and whatever happens, happens. But that's it. And so, and I lived every day that there is no other option. And here's my layman's explanation. We have trillions of cells in our body. And there is, you know, there between epigenetics and just different forms of science, they've proven over and over that your thoughts, your emotions determine the health of your cells. And so my layman's explanation is that you have trillions of cells that essentially do whatever you communicate to them to do through your thoughts, your words, and your emotions. If you tell them, oh my God, the doctors are saying I'm probably going to die, they're like, all right, whatever you say. Mm-hmm. But if you say, no, we're healing, we're going to live, there's no other option. So I doubled down on my Miracle Morning, and the entire Miracle Morning, all 6 of the savers became about beating cancer. So I meditated every day on beating cancer. I read those affirmations that I started to recite earlier on beating cancer. I visualized my body healing. I visualized a perfect circle, which was what your cells are supposed to look like. And under the microscope, mine were a mess. I visualized them healing, right? I exercised every morning. Of course, I read books on beating cancer, and I journaled what, you know, oh, I need to let go of this, the fear I am feeling that what if I do everything right and I still die. That's not serving me. Now, it's serving me that I should probably prepare my will and, you know, do some irresponsible things for my kids. But it's not serving me to live in that state of fear. So I'm letting that go. I'm grateful that my body is a miraculous organism that can heal itself. I'm writing that down. And today I'm going to do my coffee enema and I'm going to, you know, go for a run and I'm going to meditate and so on and so forth. And
you took control, brother.
Totally. Took responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely. So good. By the way, I'm an immediate implementer. Mm-hmm. Which is why earlier I want to like jump off the table and go for a run. But as you're talking, I have a friend whose father is dealing with the situation. Mm. So I immediately was texting, you know, that research,
crispycancer.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. I'm the same way. Dude. Whenever anything comes up, I just grab my phone.
I cannot do it.
People are like, are you on your phone? I'm like, no, I'm texting you the thing I told you about. I'm looking it up. Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
Beautiful. Your new book.
Yeah, that's the newest book, The Miracle Equation. And I wrote that really because of the cancer journey.
I love it. And what's it about? And thank you for the gift.
Yeah, absolutely. So you see on the front, I mean, I really give away the whole, like I just give it away on the front. It says, the two decisions that move your biggest goals from possible to probable to inevitable.
Inevitable.
Unwavering faith and extraordinary effort. And I mentioned that earlier, like that, this was so it's interesting. I created the miracle equation when I was 21 years old. Most people, from the outside, they're like, wow, he's really milking this miracle brand, right? Miracle Morning, now he's got Miracle Equation. But interestingly enough, the miracle equation came like 17 years before the Miracle Morning was an idea. And it was when I was in sales. I was trying to break a sales record and do something that no one in 50 years, over a million sales reps had attempted, no one had done in 50 years. I was trying to break this record. And it was the most sold in 14 days. And our manager comes up and he said the day before the contest started, we were at our meeting and we're getting the sales team all ready. It's this 2-week sales contest. And he says, hey, everybody, I got news for you. You might want to adjust your goals. The conference got moved up 14 days. You only have 10 days it's called a push period. And I raised my hand. I'm like, hey, like this doesn't count for the record I was going for, right? Like, because it's a shortened period, because I had to do it this specific time, right? Yeah. And he said, Hal, unfortunately,
it is.
You've got to do it in 10 days. And I'm like, that's not, dude, 14 days was impossible. That's not fair. Right. Like, so I go home and I feel like a victim. I'm like, how could this happen? Because I had spent the last few weeks like, you know, making affirmation. I'm getting my mind around doing this thing that had never been done before, right? And now I just had 33% roughly of my window taken away.
Yeah.
And then I remembered something that one of my mentors, Dan Cassetta, taught me. And it was another Jim Rohn quote. He said, Jim Rohn said, the purpose of a goal is not actually to hit the goal. The purpose of a goal is to give you a target to work towards so that you can become the type of person that can hit goals. Mm. Some goals you'll hit, some you'll exceed, some you'll fail miserably. He said, but the growth lasts forever. Only the growth lasts forever. You know, you make a bunch of money, you're going to spend it and you're on to the next thing. So I thought, what if I take that approach? What if I just give it everything I have for these 10 days? Like I literally tell myself, I'm going to hit the goal. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And I put forth extraordinary effort. So that was the unwavering faith. I'm going to do this. I'm going to reach this goal. And I put forth extraordinary effort. I give it everything I have every day. I thought, and I do that knowing that whether or not I hit the goal, I'm developing the mindset and the habits that will serve me long after these 10 days. Mm. I thought, now there's no fear of failure.
It's a win.
Yeah, you can't fail if you shift the purpose of a goal from hitting the goal to the growth that comes from that unwavering faith and unwavering commitment to put forth extraordinary effort, do whatever it takes. So I went out there in those 10 days. The first 7 days, and I frame it this way because it was like the first week we had to turn our orders in every week, right? I turned my orders in. I was, you know, I needed to be I had 10 days. So out of 7 days, I needed to be 70% of the way to my goal, right? And I was less than 50% of the way. I mean, I was so far off and I only had 3 days left. It was but I was like, and it was funny. I went to turn my orders in and my manager goes, hey, are you where you need to be? And I said, dude, not even close. He said, that's all right. Lower the goal, man. He's like, it's still respectable to go for this, you know, number. I go, Frank, I don't think you understand. I am committed to giving it everything I have to reach that goal, regardless of my results up until the last moment. And he's like, okay, all right, go for it. Does that mean I wasn't scared? I was terrified. Like logistically, I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen. But I overrode fear. And I did the same thing when I applied the miracle equation to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
When I felt fear, I overrode it with unwavering faith. Unwavering faith was that first step in the affirmation formula. I am committed to living to be 100 plus years old alongside Ursula and the kids, no matter what, there is no other option, right? And that's the thing, that becomes your consciousness. You create your own level of consciousness.
That's right.
And so during this period, I go, I'm committed to selling X amount of dollars and reaching this goal no matter what, there's no other option. And I would literally, I can see it driving down the freeway, yelling that affirmation over and over and over again. And it ended up on the last day, I was still quite a bit of ways away from the goal and I had two appointments. I'm like, all right, I have to have my two biggest orders ever on both of these appointments back to back. I go to the first lady's house. Again, I was selling Cutco knives, right? Go to the first lady's house, knock, 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 knock. She doesn't answer. I call her cell phone. She goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I forgot. I'm across town. I can't get home. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is my last chance, right? And so she hang up with her and I'm like, all right, it just went from impossible to impossibler, if that's a word, right? I go to my last appointment. I get there, I wait down the street, wait like an hour, get to finally pull up, knock on the, and I'm going, and but I'm affirming it. I'm committed. I don't know how this is going to happen. I'm committed to having my biggest order ever and reaching this goal.
Yeah.
I knock on the door and a lady answers the door with a heavy accent. And I go, is Betty here? And she says, oh no, she's gone for the day. She's they're like 4 hours away. And I'm like, no. And she goes, can I help you? I go, do you mind, who are you? She says, I'm her sister-in-law. I'm on vacation for my brother's 50th birthday party. And to be clear, I needed to sell $3,000 more of Cutco kitchen knives. Nice. And our biggest set we made was $1,500. So I'm like, I had to sell two of them on those last two appointments, but now I've got one appointment. And now it's the lady on vacation. From Europe.
It wasn't even like, your original.
She's not going to buy
right.
Cutco and fly back. You know, she lives in Switzerland or whatever. And she goes, and I go, no, thank you, but no, thank you. Because I'm thinking like, there's no way she's not going to buy anything. But then the voice in my head, I'm committed to give it everything I have until the last possible moment, no matter what, there's no other option. I'm like, dude, the last possible moment has not arrived. I got an hour and a half till I got to go to the conference.
Let's do this.
I was like, actually, ma'am, if you wouldn't mind, could I do my appointment? So I'm doing the appointment. And this is why I called it. I don't think I called it the miracle equation. No, not until it worked. And then I started teaching it. So I go in, I do the appointment. And she tells me two things during the appointment that like, I mean, you call it a coincidence, but the odds of this are indescribable. And I was this close to walking away and not even taking the appointment. She says, well, it's so interesting that you're showing me kitchen knives. My husband and I were just looking at a really high-end set of Henkel back home before we flew out here, but we decided we're going on vacation. Let's get it when we get home. And I go, oh, these are better than Henkel. Let me show you. And then she goes, also, my brother, I told you I'm here for his 50th birthday party.
We need a gift.
We have been racking our brain trying to find him a gift. And she goes, yeah, and Danny, I'll let you guess. What do you think his favorite hobby was?
Cooking.
Cooking. So she buys two ultimate sets. I break the record by $17. I drive to the conference and, you know, and I mean, right. And so a few weeks later, one of my colleagues goes, Hal, can you teach me how you broke that record? And I was like, honestly, it's two decisions.
That's it.
I go, this sounds overly simple, but let me break them down for how to apply them. Unwavering faith. I go, that simply means that you have to make a conscious decision every moment of every day that you are committed, no matter what, to give it everything you have until the last possible moment, right? And that's it. And so, and put it in writing and recite it every day over and over and over. And when you feel fear, replace it with faith over and over and over and over.
Because let's be clear, the fear is going to come.
Totally.
The negative thought is going to come.
The self-doubt's going to come.
But
sure.
The moment that you decide to overcome it,
override it,
you literally override it.
Yep.
Like a little tip, just say cancel, clear, delete.
Mm.
Cancel, clear, delete that fear and then override it with the vision.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And then the second piece, extraordinary effort, which it sounds simple. Oh, so I have to work hard. It's really not about that. It's consistency more than anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I will do everything I can every day.
Yeah.
And so I taught it to her. And she, it was like same thing. Like she's going into the last day and she's like, okay, I'm like 5,000 away from, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but you've got me believing in your juju or whatever. Right? And so she's like, I've got 6 appointments. I'm going for it. And she sells like $7,000 that day and hits it. And I was like,
so she did it.
She did it. And I go, okay, wait, it worked for me. It worked for Jerry. And I go, I'm going to go to my office and give this as a speech. And I'm going to teach it to all our sales reps. And like, that week, 5 of them go out and they have the biggest week they've ever had. And they came back, they're like, dude, it worked. I just kept affirming unwavering faith. I kept, you know, and I was like, and so when I got cancer, the day I was diagnosed, before I told my wife, like, I was like, the miracle equation. I said, that's it. I'm going to maintain unwavering faith that I can beat cancer. And I'm going to put forth extraordinary effort every moment of every day until
and,
I do.
And then I'm going to write a book about it.
I didn't even think about that. But then once I beat cancer and it worked, I thought, I told you I'd written in my goals, I want to traditionally publish a book this year. And I wrote down ideas and they were like, can't change it was an idea for a book. And then the miracle equation. And then I forgot what the third one was. But I pitched those to Penguin Random House and they loved the miracle, surprisingly. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like on my heart. This is awesome.
This is awesome.
Yeah. And people have read, you know, the miracle equation, the miracle morning. They tell me, some people, you know, most people say the miracle equation was more impactful because I do it every day.
Yeah.
But like the miracle equation, like I love that book. It changed my mindset, you know, so just to each their own.
Beautiful. I love it. How? This is my favorite podcast, seriously, out of all of them. And I know I say that, but this one, you know how I got to be honest, it just ignited something in me, you know, and for all of you, like this is real talk here for all of you who are on the spiritual journey, who, you know, maybe do plant medicine, who maybe go all in to healing your heart. I want to remind you, you know, because this happens, right? When you're really in your heart, there's a moment where you just feel like, I don't want to do anything anymore. I just want to be kumbaya.
Yeah.
I want to like hug the trees. Totally. It's a very real moment. That's because you're back in your heart. Don't forget, there's a harmonization of both, right?
Yep.
And that's when you find your true power. And it's up to you, right, to love life so much that you want to find that true power. Because then when you are an example of what's possible for your life, guess what? You get to help other people do the same. And that's how we heal the world. That's how we create miracles. And that's how we change life, man. We absolutely do. So thank you, my friend.
Amen, brother. Thank you, Danny, for having me.
How do people get a hold of you?
Go to miraclemorning.com. That's the best hub for all the things. You can get the books there, the app there. We have our Miracle Morning community, which is like a 330,000 person Facebook group.
Wow.
You can join that at miraclemorning.com. So miraclemorning.com is the hub for all the things.
Beautiful.
You can get a hold of me that way as well. You know, you can reach out to me through the website.
I love it. I love it. That's it. This was a good one. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching or listening. If this week's episode resonated with you deeply and you're ready to discover more about yourself, go to DannyMorrell.com and check out some of our upcoming events and our resources. Or if you'd like to learn more about our coaching programs, simply shoot us a message on Instagram and one of our team members will reach out to you immediately.